We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Rhonda Nordic. Rhonda is the founder and CEO of the Women's Financial Wellness Center. As a certified financial education instructor, her speaking platform provides education, inspiration, and hope for recently or soon-to-be single women. She has been featured at GE Healthcare, the Brady Corporation, and Marquette Law School, to name a few. In addition, she has appeared on Fox 6 News and The Morning Blend. Most recently, Rhonda launched her own podcast called Divorce Conversations for Women. Rhonda, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Lori, for having me.
I am excited for this conversation because, as you know, I love podcasting. And as you definitely know, we both love networking because that's how we met, right?
That is true.
So not only are you podcasting, running a business, but you also have quite the speaking journey. So can you tell us a little bit about your public speaking journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting because I actually started speaking when I was 11 years old. And so I feel like public speaking has been something that has been always part of my life. I will tell the listeners that, you know, even after all of these years, I still do get nervous. And so if you feel nervous, it's normal. We just kind of learn how to channel that energy into something positive. But I started speaking, I at 11 years old was speaking for an optimist club, and they had hosted a competition, I guess you could say. And as I stood in front of that group, the whole intention with the presentation was to bring awareness to our particular social topic. And I had everybody in the audience convinced that my dad was killed by a drunk driver. And the reason for that was because my dad was actually an alcoholic, and I wanted to bring awareness to that issue. And the reason I tell you that is because, you know, I realized at that time the power of public speaking. I mean, here at 11 years old, I've got everybody, you know, in the room crying. And I took that really seriously. And so I used public speaking as a platform for me to be able to share the things that I'm really passionate about. And hopefully, you know, continue to use that for change. And I know that it's been a big part of not only my educational background, but also my business as well.
So I know that you work with a number of professional women, and a lot of them are looking to get into that public speaking space for their businesses. What are your top tips that you have for those that really want to leverage public speaking to grow their business?
Well, I would say the first thing is to make sure that you have a topic that you're super passionate about. And the reason for that is because a lot of times it's less about the actual words as it is the passion behind it. And so for most of the people that are in business, they are passionate about their business, but they really want to make sure that they're coming from a position of education. I think over the years, people have unfortunately used public speaking as a way to just sell products or whatever. And it really should be used for educating with a call to action to help, you know, move them in a particular direction. So that's one of the things I would suggest. The other thing is practice, practice, practice. I mean, you know, finding opportunities that you can speak for free. But again, delivering a very clear educational message. And the last thing is, I think, networking. You know, any of the public speaking engagements that I've had, paid or I don't do very many free ones anymore, but free or paid over the years all came from networking. And especially the larger corporations that I have spoken at, that came from networking. It wasn't me just calling the company and saying, hey, are you looking for a speaker? Which is not something that I actually ever suggest to people. I usually say, hey, how can I add value to your organization? Are there specific things that you guys would like, you know, help with? And then using that as a way to tee up that conversation.
Oh, those are all fantastic tips. And I agree with all of them. You definitely want to speak from passion. I think your audience is definitely going to connect with that. Practicing is so important. And definitely, as this show is about, obviously, networking is definitely a value. So great tips that you're sharing. When it comes to public speaking, though, what are some of your biggest pet peeves that you've seen from others?
My biggest pet peeves?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh my gosh. So my first one is going over in the time allotted. So if somebody says that you have 20 minutes, you have 20 minutes. If they say you have an hour, you know, you can take the 50 minutes and then tee up time for questions. But I would say the biggest thing is not making the most of the time. And the second thing that goes along with that is trying to cram too much information in too short of a time. So, you know, people will be doing presentations and they feel like, oh my gosh, I've got 5 minutes. And so then they start like clicking through slides like, oh, we're just going to kind of fly through this stuff. And it leaves the audience feeling like, okay, well, yeah, but what was that? What was number 3, 4, and 5? I didn't get it. Okay. And so they leave disappointed.
That's all of those I can definitely relate to. And you know, you've seen in presentations before where, you know, people are looking at their watch going, okay, I thought this was going to end already. So I think you start to turn off individuals, even if the content was great, if you're not being conscious of their time.
Right.
Value.
Well,
add.
You know, when I was at a presentation, this was probably about 2 years ago, and I was sitting in the front row. And the gal went over, and I mean, like significantly over, like 20 and then 25 minutes. And I had to leave to get back to the office to meet with a client. And I had to walk in front of the speaker and down the middle aisle. And I got to my car and I was like, oh my gosh, had this thing wrapped up at 1:30. I wouldn't be in the spot. Like, this is kind of annoying. So, you know, not only from a speaking perspective, mm-hmm. but also as a guest, I think that that's really important.
Well, and that goes back mm-hmm. to your practice, 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 because if you're practicing, you can time yourself and you know, oh, I can fit this in within this time period, or I've got to make some adjustments so that I am being conscious of the
Absolutely.
Time that I'm allotted. Good advice. Well, let's migrate this conversation to networking a little bit. My goal is to really alleviate the fear that individuals have around this word networking. It's so scary. I'm hoping that you can help our listeners, you know, kind of get over this fear a little bit by sharing some of your experiences. So can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking story or experience that you've had?
Yeah. So, you know, networking for me is one of those things where I really want to be intentional. And, you know, I'm sure that I'm not alone in the sense that networking is not, if I'm totally honest, my most favorite thing to do. And even though I'm a fairly outgoing person, it really still is challenging for me sometimes. So I would say the first thing that has been really helpful for me is to be intentional about not only what I'm doing when I'm at networking events, but even which networking events I participate in. And so I would say the most successful story relates to, I met a woman at a networking event and built a relationship with her. And I found out that her sister at the time was heading up a women's group within a company. And so I asked for an introduction and she gladly did that. And I connected with this gal and was able to land a speaking engagement.
Cool. So your connection that you met at a networking event shared a little bit more about more of the personal relationships because it was her sister, it sounds like. So you built a nice relationship of trust to open it up into that family. And then a huge opportunity came to you because of that relationship. So that's fantastic.
Well, and I think a lot of times we don't know who people know, you know, that we don't know who they know or what connections that they may have. I mean, you know, for my business is pretty niched out. And so, you know, if I'm talking to somebody that is, you know, in my case, happily married, and I'm working with women that are going through divorce, you know, that individual may not be my ideal client, but they know people, you know?
Yep.
And so it's just sharing, whether we're sharing from a stage or we're sharing one-on-one, it's just having a very clear heart-centered message on, you know, who you are and what you do. And I think that has really, I have seen the fruits of doing that.
Fantastic. So you get around, I know you're very active in the community. You do a lot of speaking engagements. You're part of a number of networking organizations intentionally. How do you best stay in front of or nurture this network and the community that you've developed?
So one of the ways that has worked really well for me is, I mean, certainly social media has been an important piece of it. And doing, honestly, a lot of my potential clients are on Facebook. And so, you know, doing Facebook Lives certainly helps to nurture that relationship. I would also say, I mean, just making a commitment to get involved. You know, we only can, the networking groups that we're part of are only as good as, you know, our involvement. And yet the caveat to that is making sure that we're in the right ones. So that I have been part of networking groups over the years that, you know, great organizations, but they just were not a good fit for me and my business. And so, you know, the example that I give is, okay, if I'm working with women that are going through divorce, where are those women going to be? Or where are the women that maybe know or people that know women that are going through divorce going to be? And making sure that I'm intentional about, you know, connecting in that way. If I serve women, you know, being part of the, you know, men's yacht club in Milwaukee is probably not going to be the best place for me. You know, and so I'm just very intentional about about that. And I think that's the first thing. And then getting involved.
Absolutely. So what advice, and speaking on the getting involved, I think that's going to lead into here. But what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
You know, I would say, again, make a list of some potential opportunities for you to get involved. And you know, find things that you enjoy doing. I think that makes networking as a whole a little bit easier if you are part of organizations that you resonate with or you have things in common with the people that are in that group. I mean, you know, Lori, you and I are part of the eWomen Network. And part of the reason that I joined that organization was really because of their mission. You know, to help 1 million women achieve $1 million in annual revenue. Well, when I look at my business and where I want to go, that resonated with me. And that way I know that, you know what, if everybody else in that room, if that mission resonates with them, I feel like I'm in the right place. And, you know, and I think networking, a lot of times people try to force it, but I'm really of the mindset of, having it be organic. So like one of the communities we've built, I've got a network of what I call inner circle folks. And these are people that work specifically with people that are going through divorce. So it's the CPAs and the attorneys and the therapists and the mortgage brokers and stuff like that. And those people are intimately involved in the divorce process. And so I've built that kind of inner circle community. And then we've got a support community, which is people that have come alongside that have said, hey, we believe in what you're doing. We want to be part of it. But they aren't as intimately involved in the process. So health and wellness professionals and stuff like that. And then I've actually done networking events once a quarter with those folks so that they can meet the other people in our network that also share that same vision. And again, you know, I think sometimes it's just being intentional and not forcing it, but creating the space for that networking to happen organically.
I think that's really important. You've touched on a number of things I just want to highlight. One, I like the idea of making a list of the opportunities to get involved in and finding things that are of interest to you. And I really liked how you, I mean, networking does have to be organic, and I like how you've kind of mapped out your own community to some degree, and that you're hosting events to just kind of support and nurture this community that you're establishing. So lots of really good points and value add that you're offering. Let's migrate to some digital conversations. I know you touched on social media a little bit, but digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
Well, so I'm still very much a face-to-face kind of person, but as my business has continued to grow, I've certainly, I guess out of necessity, been forced to, you know, to embrace the digital aspect. I have found that, thankfully, social media, it's like, gosh, you think about all the people that, you know, networked or built their businesses prior to social media. Man, they had, you know, they had a lot of ground to cover. But LinkedIn has been great for meeting people initially and scheduling meetings. I've been very happy with some of those relationships that have developed from there. And again, Facebook for me is a great place because a lot of, you know, a lot of my clients or potential clients are there. And so again, in doing Facebook Lives and doing consistent is the key word, right? Consistent posts. People feel like they know me before I know them. And so there are times when I can do a consultation and after 30 minutes, you know, they hire me to help them going through the divorce process and quite frankly, invest in a pretty, you know, pretty decent size coaching package. So, you know, that's certainly, I don't know. I just think it's really pretty fascinating how we're able to do that.
Digital has definitely changed the game from what business used to be. And it's still changing. You know, I just had a conversation with another guest on the show that we talked a lot about how we're in this big shift right now as far as technology is making waves on how business is conducted. And some people are really embracing it and others are just afraid of the change that's happening. But it sounds like you're really leveraging the tools from a digital standpoint, but kind of integrating them into your traditional process overall. So well done.
Yeah, I would say that's exactly right.
If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
That's a great question, Lori. you know what? I would actually say one thing that I wish that I would have done sooner in my career is become very good at assertive communication, because I remember learning about assertive communication in college. My degree is actually in communications with a journalism emphasis, and I had anxiety about it. And then I entered the financial industry in 2002 and clearly had not mastered that. and so, you know, that finding that way. And now, you know, certainly I have gone through the learning curve and it's really just part of me. But that would have saved me a lot of headache and angst and anxiety along the way. So finding those ways to say, you know what, I value myself, but I also value you. And let's have some of those tough conversations and, you know, and then giving myself some grace along the way, because it takes time to master assertive communication skills, but it's fantastic when you can get to that place where you can have those healthy conversations, you can, you leave there feeling valued, the other person feels valued, and, you know, and then you can move on.
Yeah, that I've not heard of the phrase assertive conversations or communication or the style of it. I mean, based on the what you just shared of what it is, I totally understand what it is. I didn't realize it was actually something that was formally taught. So I'm really intrigued in what that is.
The assertive communication, again, came out of more of like survival techniques. When I was in the financial industry, I'm like, I have got to learn this thing, figure this thing out, because I was one of the youngest women in the firm and very early on became a significant player. And, and I wanted people to take me seriously, but I wasn't communicating in a way that, would do that. So, the antithesis to assertive communication is really passive communication, meaning, hey, I don't really know what to say and I'm not going to say it. Or I feel intimidated and so I don't say anything because, gosh, does my opinion really matter? And then you've obviously got the other side of the spectrum, which is, the aggressive communication, and which doesn't always mean louder, but it's manipulative and controlling and whatever. And a lot of times people will pendulum swing from passive to aggressive and back and forth. But finding that place where, is kind of essentially the ideal spot is really a great place to be. So, yeah, that's what I would, if, 20 years ago, that's what I would have done.
That's good. Good input. All right. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person that you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
Ooh. Well, do they have to be still alive?
Well, the idea is that I'm going to challenge you to legitimately kind of take that next step and start connecting with them. Okay. So I would say yes.
Okay. So that is a great question. And somebody that I haven't already connected with. I think that the person that I would actually like to meet is Kristen Armstrong. And the reason for that is because, obviously she's an athlete but she went through a really challenging divorce many years ago. And I have read some of her quotes and read a little bit about her story. And I'm inspired by her strength, her positivity, and yet her being really vulnerable and honest during a really challenging period of time.
So how do you think you would start that journey to connect with her?
Well, so certainly, with the digital aspect, I mean, following on social media, Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, I need to go back and check because I may have initially, done some of that, but I think it's also engaging in some of those aspects and maybe being as bold as to, ask a question or send her a message.
I mean, she would probably be a great guest on your podcast, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely worth the ask. I hope you take that next step and challenge yourself to reach out to her and connect with her, because like you said, digital technology just makes it so much easier to do that than what it used to be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, she's certainly, and I love that. I mean, thank you for asking that question, because she's somebody that's been on my radar, and we just had launched the podcast in April. So I wanted to get, some episodes under our belt. So I think, we've got about almost 40 now. And so I think, in 2019, I will reach out to her.
Cool. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
As a professional who thrives on continuing to learn and educate, I'm always intrigued to hear what my guests are doing from their own self-education, whether it be listening to podcasts or reading books. So what are you doing? Are you reading a book right now that you can share with our listeners?
Well, the one that I'm reading probably isn't too interesting to everybody else, but I am actually, most of my reading right now is I'm actually studying for some additional credentials to better serve my clients. So it's financial stuff related to divorce, and listening to webinars and podcasts around that. So at this particular time, I'm pretty immersed in all things related to my business. But I do have one that has been a real classic one, I guess you could say, over the years that I recommend to a lot of people. And it's a book by Robert Kiyosaki called Cash Flow Quadrant. Mm-hmm. And just taking a look at different ways that you can generate revenue, whether it's, you know, being an employee, being self-employed business owner, or whether your business is at the point where you're actually generating income and could step away from the business and potentially have something that could be a saleable entity. So that's been one of my favorites over the years that I will often pull out and read. The other one that I have read recently that I continue to kind of go back to is a book called, oh my gosh, now it's going to escape me. It's a book by Dr. Henry Cloud, and it's called Necessary Endings. And I don't know about the listeners, but I know that I certainly have a hard time sometimes letting go of things, whether it's from a personal perspective or from a business perspective or from a career perspective. But the whole premise of the book is getting people to think about, you know, we have to be able to create the space by letting go of things and reprogramming some of those patterns. And we don't have to wait till we're absolutely so miserable that we are, you know, in a really bad place to make decisions. We can proactively make changes. And so those are the two that I would actually recommend for people.
Oh, those sound really interesting. I've definitely read the Cash Flow Quadrant before. I should probably reread it because of you, hearing you talk about it again, just kind of refreshed my memory. But I haven't heard of the Necessary Endings book. Definitely will take a look at that. Rhonda, do you have any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
You know what? I have a great quote that I would encourage people to think about. And it's, a mind that is stretched by a new experience can never go back to its old dimensions. And so just knowing that, you know, we can put ourselves in some of those experiences that will change us moving forward.
Can you say that again? I got half of it written down.
Sure. It's a mind that is stretched by a new experience can never go back to its old dimensions. And it's by Oliver Holmes.
That totally makes sense. It's nice. Thank you so much for sharing that. Rhonda, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what is the best way that they can reach you?
Sure. They can reach me via the website at www.womensfinancialwellnesscenter.com, or they can shoot me a message and email me at Rhonda@WFWCLLC.com.
WFWCLLC.com. We will include that information in the show notes. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today, Rhonda.
Hey, thanks, Lori. I appreciate it.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Rhonda Nordic for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.